Welcome to Women Got Game, where we uncover untold stories of extraordinary women in sports across Northwest Ohio and beyond. I'm Sophia Fisher, and we're going to celebrate the evolution of female athletes, coaches, and sports enthusiasts. Let's dive into a world often overlooked in the broader sports narrative. Ready to explore? Let's play. Today's episode, we explore the dynamic landscape of women's basketball in the wake of an unprecedented NCAA women's basketball season with record-breaking viewership and monumental moments. The spotlight on the sport has never been brighter. From the historic viewership of the Women's National Basketball Championship to the electrifying excitement of the WNBA draft, the momentum is undeniable. During this multifaceted discussion, we'll draw inspiration from our guests today as we discuss a poignant distinction between a movement versus a moment, recognizing the need for structural changes to drive lasting impact. Our exploration will center on the path forward, identifying strategies to amplify sponsorship opportunities, foster equality, and propel women's basketball to new heights. Join us as we navigate the complexities of creating a movement versus a moment for the long-awaited respect and explosion of women's basketball. Our guest today is Shelly Hyatt Weston. Shelly has recently joined Hornet Sports and Entertainment as the organization's president of business operations. Hyatt Weston goes to Charlotte after spending 12 years with the Cleveland Cavaliers, including the last two as executive vice president and chief commercial officer. Hey, welcome, Shelly.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, and let's just dive right in. And my first question is, tell us about your journey and how you ended up working with the NBA and within the sports entertainment industry. And what inspired you to pursue a career in sports, specifically in relation to basketball?
Yeah, well, I think, so first of all, it's really exciting to be in sports. I have to say that I didn't intend in the beginning to be in sports. I played basketball as a collegiate athlete and throughout school, and when I was graduating, I actually went into the casino industry first, into marketing and advertising and database marketing, and then fate took me to a role. There was a career fair at the Hornets, actually, ironically, New Orleans Hornets and New Orleans, and I applied for a job there in marketing as well as sponsorship. And then got the job in marketing first, and that's how I joined the Hornets organization, at the New Orleans Hornets organization at the time, and really did a lot of behind the scenes with the creative work, working with our designers and so forth at the New Orleans Hornets, and then moved into a sponsorship world there, where I spent most of my time for a period of time also leading their community investment team before moving back to sponsorship world through moving to Cleveland, Ohio for the Cavaliers organization in 2012. I did that in sponsorship and then sort of worked my way within the sponsorship realm for a period of time and over the last 12 years, and then most recently as chief commercial officer for the Cavaliers prior to taking the current role that I am now with the Hornets. So it's been an exciting journey. I didn't intend to it for it to fall into place, but it did, and it's been very rewarding to be in such an exciting industry that's also a career.
That's awesome. And you did play basketball in college, correct?
I did. I played at Tulane University during my collegiate years, and excited for them. They actually have a new head coach now, Ashley Langford, that was there 1 year, I believe, when I was there. So excited for them and for their next phase as well in the collegiate basketball space.
Well, that's a beautiful segue into what I want to talk about next with you. And that's surrounding, women's NCAA basketball and into WNBA. And for decades, right, women's NCAA seasonal media exposure and the tournament time was undervalued, in my opinion, and was held back by structural inequities. And only now is it finally getting significant investment, visibility. And in the next year, you know, we finally will receive a media rights contract that comes along, you know, close to reflecting, you know, what it's worth. And we can't forget about the impact of the 2024 WNBA season, the draft. And here you have three WNBA teams that sold out for the season tickets for the first time. You have new single game revenue ticket records being broken with the New York Liberty. They generated, I think, $2 million from the win over Indiana Fever. That was according to Associated Press. And then, you know, your averaging attendance is like over 8,000 and, you know, up nearly one third from its, you know, original 2023, which is over, I think, 6,615, if I want to be specific. And you have, you know, viewership up and media, you know, with an average of WNBA looking at 2.1 million with was a Fever versus the Connecticut game. So is it beyond the Clark effect? And what needs to happen is, as you look at this, being in the NBA, having your experience over the years, what's your thoughts on this? And subsequently, what's going to help this go from a moment to a movement?
Yeah, well, so, you know, as you stated, I think all a lot of excitement around women's basketball, which is a summary of it, right? I think, you know, it's and Clark has been a face and has been a significant piece of driving that, but she's certainly not the only piece, right? Like, this has been a lot of moving pieces together, people that you don't see behind the scenes. You know, I think about Kathy Engelbert and as the commissioner of the WNBA and the amount of work she's been doing behind the scenes, pushing for the movement of women's basketball that, you know, may not be as visible as Caitlin Clark is, or Angel Reese, or a lot of the other players that have just become a face of women's basketball, which is great. So this has been going on. And oh, by the way, there's a lot of talented female athletes that have been around. You know, I remember the days of Shamika Holzla, and Tamika Catchings and Lisa Leslie, like when I was growing up. And so there have always been talent there. And I feel that now, with a merger of, visibility, you know, coming from whether it be NIL, whether it just be generally people are on their phones and seeing more through social media, they are getting closer to athletes. And so what the performance of athletes are doing, what female athletes are doing now, it's actually more visible and it's going more viral. And so that's a great thing. People are following, people are paying attention, and people are respecting the game. Because at the end of the day, you can talk a lot about personalities, but it's about the game of basketball that people really are drawn to. And so you see a lot of positive momentum with all of that, culminating here at this most recent Final Four that we as Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse had an amazing opportunity to host at its peak, when you think about the ratings that we talked about, the 18 billion visibility of impressions, that was more than NBA games and more than MLB games and the World Series games, right? Like, there's just been a lot of people watching. So it's an exciting time. And I think you're seeing, with all these sellouts, I think you're seeing the right steps in place. You know, nothing's going to change overnight, right? It has to be steps that are in place, but to ultimately lead to a bigger picture. And I think that we're going in the right direction based on everything that you're seeing. And most importantly, the people behind the scenes, like the Kathy Engelbert, that are helping to drive structural change that is going to be needed to really make this a movement.
Yeah, that's why I was really excited that you joined us today, because really looking at it from your perspective, obviously being, you know, a woman in the business of sport and how big it is, but specifically from an NBA perspective, from the men's perspective, we often hear that there's the difference in media coverage that affects sponsorship opportunities, you know, that are for women's basketball compared to men's basketball. But, you know, what are these disparities and how do you move through them? But I think the NBA has had its challenges as well. And I think I'm really excited because you understand the business of sport, and I'm so happy to hear you, you know, commend people who behind the scenes, or the people who paved the way, right? The Cynthia Coopers, Rebecca Lobos, and beyond. And look how long, it seems like it's taken so long to get here since Title IX. But I think we're moving the needle. So I'm actually curious to ask you, and looking at that, we're talking about season ticket sales, and you know a lot about that, especially with the NBA experience. But do you see any softness coming from those ticket sales? While it's at an all-time high, do you feel it's going to continue to rise, or do you think we're going to see some prices maybe devalued, getting tickets at lower rates, and secondary sales in that market? What are your thoughts?
I think you're going to see both. I think the beauty of them rising, it's a great thing. Look, the market, you know, at some point, there's only so much a percent of behavioral changes that someone's willing to take, right? Like if, you know, they're paying $1,000 for tickets, you know, are they going to pay $20,000 for the same ticket? Probably not, right? So there's a timing and a place that's going to happen. However, they are paying significantly more for them, which is good. More importantly than what they're paying for them, are they showing up? Are they coming? Are they actually engaging in the game? And I think you have to keep your eye on that, because you can get a lot of funding from sponsors, and those things are extremely important. But you also want people showing up and being engaged in the game, because you don't want a gap of people funding tickets but not showing up. And so I think there's a fine balance between that. I do think that you're going to see continued growth. Typically in any kind of growth, there's like a growth period, and then there's sort of let's call it plateau, so to speak. And then typically the people that I'm talking about that are having to be visionaries and pushing the needle have to do things that then take it to the next level, right? So you continue to go in levels until you see the ultimate growth. And I do think it's in the right direction. I think, you know, one of the biggest pieces that you have to have is getting people more visible and engaged in the game. You know, when people are going to say, yeah, it's great, I'm going to watch. And they need to watch, by the way, because the ultimate unlock for all of this, when you think about compensation, is really the TV deal. And so I think at the end of the day, you have to drive, yes, you want people in the buildings and you have to drive ticket sales. And so that is extremely important. However, you have to get people watching the games to get the ratings up, to get a better leverage from a media deal, which is ultimately the most important piece of an unlock, because you look at that nationally and not just locally. So I am optimistic about it. And I think that we're going in the right direction. It's not going to happen overnight, but I think we have the people in places to continue moving it in the right direction.
So really, you know, I hear you saying, you know, the fans play a part, obviously, you know, within the media coverage, right? You want people in the seats because obviously it's reflective. You get this great deal that's coming for the first time ever in media coverage, and obviously we want it to be successful. And then tell me about, then how does the sponsorship opportunities then, you know, kind of come into play if you have the people showing up, they're in the arena, they're selling tickets? That has to help with more sponsorship opportunities, I would imagine.
Absolutely. And look, I think when you think about sponsorship opportunities, 50% should come from companies that the game is truly helping their brand, right? They're getting more eyeballs. They're getting people to try their products and their services more because they're associated with the WNBA, because they're associated with collegiate basketball and the passion of these women. And I think when you think about sponsorships, you have to get people that are creative enough to help tell the stories. So, you know, that's where the colleges and the WNBA and have to come and play to be able to present platforms that tell stories about what is the game doing, what's the passion of the game, how is it different from the NBA that attracts sponsors to want to spend money to associate their brand. And I think they that it factor, that fire, that style, that brand, there's so much about the women's game that is sellable. And so I think it's up to these organizations to create platforms that give sponsors a reason to want to associate their brand. And then we need sponsors. We need some sponsors that are just going to do it from the right civic thing to do, because it's a great platform to associate with. There's growth there, and we're trying to help the future of the game. So I think it's a little bit of both. It's the same in the NBA, so it's no different. And I think we, you know, you just continue to leverage that and watch that aspect of the business grow as well.
We hear a lot, you know, especially recently with WNBA and salaries and, you know, maxing out, you know, around, you know, 78,000 per year, what have you, and which is less than pretty much the lowest earning NBA player, according to the cut for my research. But, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, you know, NBA salaries, WNBA, and those, you know, disparities. Do you think it's really going to lean itself more into, you know, Clark receiving, for example, endorsements from Nike, $28 million over X amount of years. Wilson, again, doing the first deal with her since Michael Jordan, I think. And then Angel Reese, obviously Bayou Barbie. I mean, she's branding herself very well, or her agency is, rather. And she's got Reebok and Beats by Dre. I mean, what are you really seeing? Do you see, and it's really going to lean more towards the sponsors? Or do you feel that for the other players, like you're saying, there's so many phenomenal players in the WNBA, while they don't have necessarily name recognition, How do you see those kind of that, you know, growing more for salaries for them, and what needs to happen to make that more equitable?
Yeah, so I think if you're looking apples to apples, obviously NBA has endorsements as well, right? And NBA players. So see those endorsements grow just because there's a lot of energy. It's the it factor right now. WNBA, collegiate basketball is the place to be. So you're going to continue to see those grow, and those are great. From a structural and equity change, if you're truly looking at the structure, you've got to look at the core of where compensation comes from. So when you look at the NBA game, the NBA compensation is literally structured as you think about the CBA and you think about how the NBA league office is structured. It's based on TV revenues heavily. It's based on local ticket sales revenues, which those arenas are averaging roughly, call it 15,000 to 19,000 people a game. And so mixed with the TV, the ESPN, the TNT media rights, those components all put together and how that structure creates the compensation for men, it's completely different than the women's game. And so you're going to have those inequities until that starts to level out. So I think what you're seeing now, and where you hear people talk a lot about the media TV deal, it's so important because that's a big part of the structure of unlocking the compensation that's going to create the equity, regardless if you're a top player and have a ton of endorsements and very visible versus a player that is just a sound player in the WNBA. That you just are looking for a very sound base compensation, right, of salary, that stuff is going to level out once the media and those, again, tickets of unlock start to happen on the women's side, which they are starting to, and I think you are going to start to see them gradually increase over time.
So what are your thoughts on NIL deals and how that, obviously, I know some of the players that had NIL collegiate basketball deals were able to, you know, maintain that going into the WNBA. What is your thoughts on an NIL and collegiate women's basketball and that landscape?
Yeah, listen, I think, you know, there's a lot of differences of opinions around it. I personally think it's great. I think it's great because it gives visibility to women's basketball in a way that lets it be personal. A lot of times, some people, you know, sometimes you have a casual fan versus an avid fan that's not necessarily solely into the game of basketball. They're into the people and to the personalities. And so NIL allows athletes at an earlier age to start to share their personality and who they are, which is, I think, a great thing. I think it's going to force people earlier to start thinking about their brands in a more professional business way, which creates growth and evolution for these young athletes, women athletes. So I think there's a lot of exposure in it, but overall, I think, and look, there's going to be some learnings, and people are going to learn things, and there's going to be some areas of opportunity to grow and lessons learned. So I think overall it's going to be a positive thing. It is a positive thing. I think it's helped to lead to some of the momentum that you're seeing today. And I support it. I support it wholeheartedly and think it was a great move for the game.
I think some athletes, student athletes, you know, like Angel Reese, again, bringing her up, you know, she did a great job initially. She was building her own brand, in essence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of other student athletes look up to her and others that are doing it and doing it well. And obviously, I'm an NIL agent myself. But again, there's so many great conferences out there. And what would you say if you're talking to athletic administrators who aren't in, you know, the top conferences? How do they, you know, attract and recruit athletes with the NIL landscape the way it is? And then what do you tell brands? How do you tell them to, what opportunities exist for them to stand out by sponsoring these athletes?
Yeah, well, look, I think the athletic program isn't as large as, you know, some of the major programs that are out there. You have to be creative. You know, there are people that support locally, and I think you have to tap into that market and tap into the people. And what's your differentiator? No different than a small business coming into play. If a small business is coming into market, they got to figure out how to create the differentiator. And so I think athletic programs have to do that. And you can still teach. You can still teach the athletes how to manage brands, even if it's not as widely followed as some of the others. It's still the critical process and foundation of how does it work, right? They're learning a different aspect of business and about themselves. And I think for sponsors, I'd say local sponsors, you know, you're in markets that you're supporting your local area and region. And it's not just about women's basketball and women's basketball, but you want to see your local colleges thrive, and you want to see the local athletes in there. I mean, how amazing is it, a story of this breakout athlete that came from a very small town, a small market, that now is on a national spotlight? Well, you can help support those athletes locally early in their, you know, while before they become big, and you're a part of their story now. And how awesome is that? And so I think there's a lot of opportunity. You can't just look at, oh, I want to be with Caitlin Clark because she's now big. Like, she started at one point that was not as visible. And so I think for sponsors, I would just encourage them to get into those smaller schools and small with maybe not as visible public athletes. They still have the stories. They still are athletes, and you can still create a platform that creates some buzz that can put both the company and the athlete on a much larger scale just by going viral. So to get creative.
So it's really creating that value prop, if you will, right? No matter it's a mm-hmm. you know, if you're a small company or a large entity that is, I guess, a global brand. You know, there's an opportunity there for them to stand out, correct? Whether you're at WNBA, correct. NBA, or other. How much of that in your experience, especially being at the Cleveland Cavs and other places, you know, do you find that local companies are, you know, again, you had other teams that you dealt with in Cleveland, and now going with the Hornets, there's going to be other, you know, entities that you represent. Is it difficult because of location to attract the national brands, or is there a lot of competition with the other NBA entities out there to really get the bigger ones, or is it a kind of a combo of local sponsors as well?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, there's always, when I say competition, I mean, you know, brands have options to make choices, right? And at some point you have to, right? There's only so much budget to go around. So, I think in that aspect, you're always competing and wanting to put your best foot forward. Actually, 60% of the Cavs partnership business is national. So it's actually 40% local. So there's a lot of national companies that are still investing in Cleveland and what Cleveland has to offer. But I would tell you, it has a lot to do with people. I give a lot of credit to our partnership team. I think we have, you know, one of the best teams in the business. And we have to challenge ourselves, and we're challenged by our partners to deliver and to come with more than, you know, just assets. And so I think that overall it's a mix, but you should never be feeling like you're landlocked just because of your geography, right? There should always be opportunities to be creative and give a reason. What's the reason that a partner would want to, if they're out of town or if they're national, would want to sponsor your local? There, you got to create the story around what that looks like.
Let's talk then about marketing budgets, promotion. When you are the organization, you know, there's less investment in marketing promotions for women's basketball compared to men's basketball budgets from most universities. Again, goes back to, you know, income generation, whatnot, on ticket sales, but or WNBA, or, you know, they have similar challenges. You know, really, what can you do if, you know, with that type of situation when you have limited budget? What do you think needs to happen to help, you know, maybe taken by or actions taken by NC2A media or sponsors to address these discrepancies and to try to promote more equality?
Yeah, for and budget and I think at the end of the day, it starts from the top. So I think it's important to create and have conversations with leadership at the top to understand the importance of why I think budgets matter. To your point, you know, there are P&Ls that companies have to live by. So at the end of the day, that's important. But if they have a marketing spend, I think you have to tell the story. So it's not just about, okay, give marketing to women's basketball. What is women's basketball actually bringing to the table to show that there's a reason for that, there's a credibility to that, there's a output and an outcome to that. And I think there's absolutely that story for women's basketball, and I'm encouraged that we continue to that we do more, talk to more people at the top that have controls over budgets, but also being able to share that platform of what it looks like and how it's going to be a difference maker of how there's, again, you said, value proposition to it. It's not just doing it to do it, but there's an outcome associated with it. And I think you're starting to see that. There's lots of numbers that stand by that now that you just seen, you know, through the last tournament. And so I think now you have data to prove it, and I think that's just going to continue to grow.
Now, beyond the actual media coverage, what do you think about with I know for men's D1, they offer the for NC2A tournament units. You know, it's when they receive, you know, I think it's each one receives $2 million a prize package based on how many of their teams make it to the men's tournament and how far they advance. And then they pay off the units over, I think it's a 6-year period, you know, with each team, you know, earning money for every game. And, you know, there's some exceptions around that, of course, and I won't go into. But, you know, it's a pretty big price tag. I saw that this year NC2A is going to pay $170 million in units from its men's basketball performance. The women do not have that. Do you think that's something that's going to be possible for the NC2A to put in place soon? Or should
I'm actually not as familiar with that structure. But listen, I think, as you know, there are a lot of things that weren't in place 5 years ago for women's basketball that is now. You know, you look at even charter flights. You know, I think about WNBA that is possible now. So I think some of this is just getting the right people in place to have the conversation at the highest level to start breaking through barriers to figure out how, like finding out what is the challenge, what's the why isn't it included now in women's, and then from that why starting to come up with solutions of how to solve it and push through it. It's not just enough to have a conversation, but truly having the right advocates and visionaries in those spaces to do the work to make the change. And so, I would offer that it should absolutely be possible. We just have to figure out the how.
So let's talk about the future of how do you get fans more engaged and involved? Is fantasy gaming something, you know, that I know with NBA that it's become very popular? Do you think that it can be leveraged to create more exposure for women's basketball?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Look, you know, fantasy, the joke is they say we have to get babysitters for my husband if I'm working when it's his fantasy gaming day to draft because he's so engaged in it. So I think people are absolutely engaged in fantasy gaming. And look, anything you invest in is not about money. It's if you invest time and effort into something, you take pride in it. And when you take pride in it, you follow it. And so I think fantasy gaming just creates that, right? It creates, if you're brought into, this is your team and you're following it, you're going to absolutely be forced to follow now women athletes that you've never seen before and realize how engaging and energizing their game is and be drawn to even more athletes than you would have just, you know, the ones that you see, the top five or six athletes. So I'm a strong advocate of fantasy gaming and sports betting also. You know, I think that's a part of that. Sports betting evolved out of fantasy gaming, and so I think you just create a reason for people to follow the game that they have some buy-in to.
Awesome. So I have to ask you some personal questions while I have you, if you don't mind. Who are some of your role models or mentors, either in the sports industry or outside of it, that have influenced you personally?
Yeah, well, listen, I always say my mom has been one of my biggest mentors. She actually worked in retail her entire life, so a different segment, but long nights and weekends and hard work, and so I think a lot of similarities there to the sports world. There are so many to name. I follow a lot of people. I think what I'm actually reading right now, Sum It Up, with Pat Summitt's book. I think she was legendary. How, you know, with her and Gino, and now Dawn Staley, you think about how do these coaches get teams to play at the highest level for an entire season? I don't think people realize how difficult that is, even with the best athletes in the country. It's extremely difficult, and to be able to do that in these undefeated seasons, I think I'm really mesmerized by as a leader, and so really drawn to learn more from them. Those are three that, you know, stand out just by what they've done already. I would tell you, though, my mentor group is very diverse of industry, because I just think it's important to surround yourself with different types of people and different types of experience to offer different perspectives. And that's been helpful for me in my career path as well.
And tell me a little about, you mentioned diversity and inclusion. Obviously, you've been one of the first, I think the first African-American woman to be put into an executive position at the NBA. Am I correct with that?
No, so I was the first to be the chief commercial officer, a role in the NBA. Yeah, actually, Stunt Marshall and the Dallas Mavericks was the first CEO of a team, to run a team, the first black female CEO at the Dallas Mavericks.
Yes, that's right. That's correct. And I mean, diversity and inclusion is important in moving, you know, our sport forward. You know, what advice would you give to another woman who's aspiring to work in a male-dominated industry such as NBA or in any professional sports arena? What would you tell them?
Yeah, I would tell them the same, which is my more athlete competitive background, which is, you know, when you put your mind to something, I think, well, first of all, when you do it for the right reasons, you know, I never did anything in my career throughout and starting because I wanted to be a president or I wanted to be something. That wasn't the end game. The end game was just truly in the area that I was in to do the best that I could to outperform however I could in that space at every single moment and turn of that. So it's been over, you know, almost 20 years of that, doing just that, and it's led to this. This is what you're seeing as a byproduct now, you know, being a president of an NBA team. But I would tell them to continue, and you have to go and you have to move forward and use allies in a way of people want to support you. How do you find people that do support you that you can learn from? And continue to push forward, because it's all about solving problems and creating impact along the way. And when you can do that, you'd be surprised the amount of walls that you can break and push right through just by figuring out how to be solution-based.
Well, if you had a crystal ball, what would you like to see for women's basketball, even just really women's sports in general? What would you like to see happen in the next 10 years?
Yeah, it's like I said, in the next 10 years, one, I'd like to see more sold-out arenas and more and bigger sold-out arenas, right, for higher prices of tickets. But really people actually respecting the game and engaging in the game. You know, it's not a charity component. It's a solid business model and structure of amazing talent that has been around for a long time and now starting to come to fruition. So I'd love to see that continue in bigger and better arenas that continue to grow and develop in the best arenas, right? I mean, the best spaces, and that's for collegiate as well as WNBA. And I think when you have that, you're going to see the output of that, which is going to be better equity structures and better compensations that are equal and so forth. And so I think over time that's going to grow, and I'm excited. I'm excited to see that because I think it's going in the right direction right now.
Well, I tell you, Shelly, I followed you with the work you've done at the Cavs, and we're wishing you all the best at your new role at the Hornets Sports and Entertainment as the organization's president of business operations. And Shelly Kayette-Weston, you got game.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. I'm excited. Cleveland has been amazing for me. It's always going to be a part of home and my journey, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter. So thank you.
Exploration of women's basketball has revealed both the triumphs and challenges facing the sport. From historic viewership milestones to the importance of leveling the playing field in media coverage and compensation, the journey towards equity is ongoing. Yet, as we navigate this landscape, we are inspired by the passion and dedication of athletes, fans, and advocates alike. By harnessing the power of media, endorsements, and increased fan engagement, we have the opportunity to affect tangible change and shape a future where women's basketball thrives on equal footing. I want to give special thanks to my guest, Shelly Kayette-Weston, and to my executive producer, Chris Pfeiffer. I'm your host and producer, Sophia Fisher. Feel free to visit us at wgte.org/womengotgame.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.